Okay, it's time to talk wheels. It's the Car Guy Show with automotive consumer tips, industry updates, interviews, and enthusiast news. If you care about cars, this show is for you. Now you're tuned in, so let's get tuned up with your host. Here he is, Steve Ford, the Car Guy.
Hello and welcome to another segment of the Car Guy Show here, coming at you from the broadcast tower of News Talk 990 KTMS and at the speed of light on the World Wide Web. We're connecting you to automotive consumer and enthusiast news, insights and interviews anywhere you're hearing our signal in Santa Barbara and the surrounding communities. In today's program, we're going to move over to a visit with one of the living legends of the automotive industry, Jim Wangers, the man who created the landmark marketing of one of the most celebrated American cars of the 20th century, the Pontiac GTO. While another luminary created the engineering of the GTO, John DeLorean, Jim Wangers created the image, and what an image it became. When anyone refers to the muscle car era, few would dispute that the GTO was the spark that ignited that chapter of history for the U.S. auto industry. In this first part of the Car Guy Show today, from the archives, we're going to go back and listen to Jim from an earlier show talking about the GTO. And please know the audio tape sounds a bit less than crisp, yet the interview about the birth of the GTO is intriguing background for today. Because in the second half of the show, we'll go to speak with Jim in digital audio with you here today in 2013. Now, first from the Car Guy Show archives, let's go over and visit with Jim Wangers.
Just to refresh people's memories, or if you just joined the show this week for the first time, this is the Car Guy Show, talking with people like Jim Wangers every week. I'd like to go forward and talk about how you snuck the GTO into the marketplace under the GM corporate guidelines. But first, let's just briefly go back into your career and remind the audience, you are a consultant today, Jim Wangers, in the automotive world. You are a person who's been involved with the ad agency work. You've been involved with substantiation and research and development for manufacturers who want to make advertising claims with a company. But today, you're out and about doing a number of different projects and consulting in the automotive world. Take us back to those early days. How did you get involved with the GTO?
Well, the GTO, as you and I discussed the last time, Steve, was really an answer to a marketing problem. The parent General Motors Corporation informed all of their divisions that they were no longer going to be allowed to participate in any active motorsports. Therefore, that put Pontiac in particular in a very difficult spot, because up till that time, in the late 50s and early 60s, they had been really dominant both in NASCAR and in NHRA drag racing. They were using that platform as a way of kind of overall marketing the image of the new wide track Pontiac, which made it a very consumer oriented and a consumer accepted thing.
Right.
All of a sudden, we woke up one morning and we no longer had that stage on which to base these claims. So there was a real marketing need to come up with another imaging factor for the division.
And that's a real challenge at that point. Pontiac had some great momentum in the 50s, and then it's kind of slowed down there, and I'm sure people were scratching their heads and pretty concerned. And you were on the account at that time at what agency?
That was, at that time, it was called McManus, John, and Adam.
Okay. And you were inevitably charged with some serious responsibility with your fellow account team members, because unless you guys came up with something very creative or had a convergence, I want to say, between your advertising strategy and a great product, it was going to be a tough sell.
Well, Pontiac was unfortunately not yet at the level where they had achieved that image. We were still in the process of kind of rebuilding that image.
Right.
And the wide track cars were doing a very good job. One of the neat things about that wide track concept is the cars identified themselves on the streets.
Sure.
When you saw one, you knew, hey, there's that car with that wider tread.
Right.
Well, the engineering guys, led by John DeLorean and his team, well, you didn't have to be a brain surgeon to figure out that a 3,500-pound car with a 389 cubic inch engine didn't meet that formula.
Yeah.
This is where the guys at Pontiac really put themselves out on a limb. They felt so strongly about this concept and how important it was to carry on this imaging that they released it not as a model, but as an option. In other words, what you had to do was to order a Le Mans Sport Coupe or convertible.
Right.
And if you were ordering from the car order form, way down in the lower right-hand corner of the order form, there was a box that simply said GTO option.
Okay, so the GTO was not a model.
Not a model.
Okay.
It was an option on the Le Mans and the Le Mans coupe and convertible only.
All right, now, Jim, just to let the audience know, we're talking about Jim Wanger is working in the ad agency. Jim, you were working in the ad agency. The strategy goes on how to sneak this car out into the marketplace within the restrictions of General Motors.
That's correct.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay. What a fascinating time. Actually, I guess the economy was starting to kick up a bit, Jim?
Yeah, it was. Actually, yeah. The economy was really in pretty good shape right about that time.
Yeah.
And, of course, one of the things that was happening, and Pontiac fortunately listened to us when we presented these marketing opportunities to them, that this was the first time, really, that the so-called youth market was becoming a significant segment, both not only in numbers, but also in their ability to buy, their ability to literally participate in the retail market.
Right.
And of course, these were these huge numbers of kids that were born in the late 40s and into the 50s, were now reaching, you know, the point where they were 15 and 16 and even 17 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They were looking at that time, as every young kid did, now, even today, for some personal mobility, the opportunity to kind of get out on their own, to break away.
Sure, that whole spirit of what the wheels represent forever, the idea of individual transportation and freedom to soar.
This was the first time that they were significant in numbers and that they had what was at that time a fairly significant buying power. And in those days, there weren't problems with the insurance companies for young people with cars. All they needed to get was a parental consent or any adult consent to sign on the loan application, and they were able to actually even get a loan in putting that car on the marketplace and on the road.
Right.
So this was a very significant opportunity for a manufacturer to really reach out and put a car into the marketplace that did appeal to these young folks. Now, we had high-performance cars. The GTO certainly didn't, you know, invent high-performance cars. In fact, you know, in reality, all we really did was take an old hot rodder's trick and put it on the assembly line.
Well, sure.
Stuffing a big engine in a little car.
Well, that might be, pardon me, but that might be a defining line for the audience to relate to, because I think as long as there have been automobiles, there's been racing and there's been competition. So you could go back and talk about the 12s and 6s and V12s and so on and say there was high performance and muscle cars in that era if you defined it in terms of people in competition at the stoplight, let's say. But you're talking about, but for folks tuned in, hearing about, we're talking about this GTO with Jim Wangers. And Jim, you were there when the GTO was launched. You were there with John DeLorean helping launch an era of the muscle car race. What the audience might appreciate, this was a time when muscle cars were being defined in a new way. That is, not just a high-performance engine, but a high-performance engine in the effect of being into a smaller vehicle. That power-to-weight ratio was unprecedented, I think, generally. Jim, is that a fair way to characterize
it? That's a very good point, Steve.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole term, this whole concept, muscle car,
right,
really came about with the advent of the manufacturer,
right,
on a production line basis,
right,
putting a bigger displacement engine into a relatively smaller, lightweight car.
Yeah.
Now, we certainly didn't invent high performance. There
right,
was a
right,
lot of good high performance cars,
sure,
on the marketplace,
sure,
all through the late 50s and into the early 60s.
Sure.
But here was now an opportunity to maybe take one step further.
Yeah.
And that was really where the term muscle car came about. And
right,
by being at the leading edge, as we all know, the Pontiac GTO was the first one.
Yeah.
And there's always an advantage to being the first one.
Yeah, you can only be first once.
You know, to be very, very honest with you, we weren't, during the middle of the real muscle car craze, we weren't always the fastest.
Yeah.
But we were first.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, we were probably the best promoted.
All right, now, Jim, in the time we've got, pardon me, but I'm going to step in just for a moment to play with you for a minute. And Bob, I know you'll understand this. I just came back from spending 5 years in your other city, Detroit. Okay, Jim? You and I met in Detroit, and you and I drove one of your Pontiac GTOs on Woodward, and I feel, you know, I'm smirking as I tell you this. Jim, am I telling the truth?
You got it. Telling the truth.
I got to tell you, can you imagine the thrill of a car guy from California moving to Detroit, meeting people like Bob Lutz, Jim Wangers, Edsel Ford, all these other neat people, and being able to, Jim, I know that in the moment it was just another day in the life of two car guys, right? But you and I, you said, sure, I'll take you for a ride. And I got to tell you, Jim, I know you understand when I say this with respect and excitement. I was like a little kid, but I had to behave myself and act like an adult. I was sitting there cruising Woodward with the man himself, the godfather of the GTO. So there I am in the passenger seat interviewing you, Jim, as you know, on video, right?
That's correct,
and
yeah.
And I'm sitting there, and we're cruising Woodward, and I'm in the passenger seat with Jim Wangers in his GTO, and he's the creator of the GTO. And I'm thinking, man, if I could tell people back home what I'm doing right now. Well, I'm getting to tell people back home what I did back then. And Jim Wangers, when we were driving on Woodward, you and I were talking about something. And you tell the audience what you want to say, but the audience should know that you are a dyed-in-the-wool motorhead, gearhead, true car guy. At the top of the pyramid, you were drag racing automobiles at the drag strip, and might I say, occasionally you might launch the clutch at about 5,000 RPM at a green light.
Occasionally.
Hit that uncorked sound again, will you? Can we get some sound effects here? Yeah.
Not necessarily condoning street racing.
No, I didn't say anything about street racing. I just said launching the clutch at 5,000 RPM, okay? All right, Jim. I just want to tease you about that because I want you to talk to us just for a moment. We're going to go out to a break here and enjoy this because I want the audience to know that for the advertisers we have, they bring us this show. Jim Wangers, you're with us?
I'm sure with you.
Here's where I want you to go when we come back from the break. I want the audience to be teased. I want you to have a couple of minutes to think about what you're willing to tell us. Talk about Woodward, the drag strip of the automakers, the big three, running what you brung, whether it's Ford vehicles, Mopars, or GM, Ford, or Chrysler. It was a test track for the Detroit automakers. Am I right?
You're right.
All right. So, Jim Wangers, you come back, you tell us what you're willing to tell us, but help this audience know from the man himself, Jim Wangers, what it was like there testing cars, quote-unquote, on Woodward. When we come back, we'll talk with Jim Wangers more at the Car Guy Show from Santa Barbara.
When it comes to keeping your wheels looking like new, whether you're a passionate car buff or a daily commuter who simply seeks the best in value and integrity, there's a name in Santa Barbara that fits both profiles. Tri-County Auto Glass. Today's auto glass installers all have to service more sophisticated and precise automobiles than just a decade ago. And while the majority of auto glass businesses have state-of-the-art tools and equipment, what we all know is harder to find are the industry-certified craftspeople and the highest levels of customer service, which is why Tri-County Glass customers range from Concord Elegance level show car owners to everyday family sedan and pickup truck owners. Rock chip repairs or glass replacement with lifetime repair credit and 30 years in Santa Barbara, while a positive word of mouth reputation may bring you in, courtesy, quality, and that new window glass shine will bring you back. Tri-County Auto Glass, downtown Santa Barbara. Call them or stop in for a quote on a window repair or replacement today. 963-6200. That's 963-6200.
I'm Scott Budo, owner, manager, and a certified auto glass technician. At Tri-County Auto Glass, we are about quality, safety, and value.
So you're one of those lucky car enthusiasts who has the privilege of owning a rare, vintage, antique, or maybe one of those British specialty cars, the kind that makes heads turn and brings compliments at stoplights. Let's say a Model A Ford, a 29 Buick, or one of those stunning Packards from the 1930s. But one of the challenges of these rare vehicles is finding an auto professional who can wake up that historic machine so the engine will sing that special tune, or have headlights that both glow equally. Maybe just an old-fashioned tune-up the way it used to be, or even servicing that other ancient device, a carburetor. Sounds like a long time ago? Not at East West Motors, where servicing, repairing, and reviving mechanical gems is a daily craft. Owned and operated by a veteran Concord Elegance judge who knows what 100-point quality looks like. At East West Motors, you experience what 100-point collector car service feels like. Call 965-7003. That's 965-7003. It's the best shop this side of Radiator Springs.
My name is Roy Miller, and I approve of this message.
In the old-time movies, you used to see an automobile junkyard as a place with rusty old wrecks and big cranes scrapping obsolete machines. Those days were black and white, and today's a world of digital full color. And in the new era of the green car, Steelhead Auto Recycling is at the leading edge of used auto parts. As new and future cars approach 100% recyclability, more than 70% of even older car and truck parts find new life as they come back in service at Steelhead Auto Recyclers, which means huge savings for you. You'll save on major parts such as engines and transmissions, but you can also repair and refresh your wheels with money-saving body trim and accessory parts from hubcaps to glass, doors, fenders, taillights, and accessories. With a full-service counter and national parts search power and the new self-service section at Steelhead Auto Recycling, you'll save both ways. Plus the security of a full 90-day warranty on all parts. Digital, on the web at buyused.net or analog by phone at 683-8557. That's 683-8557. Steelhead Auto Recycling.
Auto Parts, may I help you?
Yeah, you stock serpentine belts?
Serpentine? What do you have, a snake under your hood? Parts counter, what's up?
Yeah, I need pads and rotors for an 02 Ford Mustang.
Pads and a distributor rotor? You mean pads and drums?
No, pads and rotors. I think I'll try a few more calls.
Larry's Auto Parts, Phil.
I'm looking for pads and front rotors for an 02 Mustang.
Okay, we stocked the pads. What's your concern on the rotors?
Sounds like the pads have just hit metal.
Well, bring them in and let's measure them. There's a good chance we can machine them for a fresh surface and save you money, too.
Well, yeah. Hey, what about windshield wipers?
We stock wipers and we offer free installation. And in most cases, just the refills without buying the entire blade.
More than auto parts, more than service. Along with a national CarQuest brand. Expertise you experience every visit. Larry's 8-Day Auto Parts, Old Town Galena. 964-3545. That's 964-3545.
I'm Larry's Auto Parts owner, Phil Unander. Our team is here to be your solution.
Hey, you know about getting the job done right. If you want it done right, do it yourself. Well, that's what car and truck buffs, owners of classics, custom cars, and wise consumers know when they visit Daily Car Bath, Santa Barbara's downtown coin-operated car wash supercenter for more than 40 years. After discovering Daily Car Bath for my own cars, I've returned to give my machines the superior wash and cleaning care that all car buffs appreciate. At Daily Car Bath, you'll find premium hog's hair wash brushes with conditioned soft water and five stalls with foaming high-sudsing auto shampoo that literally floats debris off your vehicle's finish, along with consistent high-pressure washing and available non-acid low-pressure wheel and tire cleaner. And for that special finish, DI&I spot-free rinse to help dissolve and eliminate mineral spot and spray wax formulated with clear coat protectant included in the cycle. See why Daily Car Bath is known as the place where customers send their friends. And take it from a fellow car buff. When it comes to the best in car care appearance, you'll find it all at Daily Car Bath, open 24 hours a day at the corner of Anacapa and Coda Streets. Quality, economy, and that showroom shine.
All right, come back, all of you. The Car Guy Show is out of Santa Barbara now, moved from Detroit for car enthusiasts, collectors, clubs, cruisers, and the car racers, and the people that keep the wheels rolling out there, all those auto service people and industry people. Hey, we are coming at you from Santa Barbara. We're talking about wheels. We're going to keep the interview going. We got a star from the motor world, the muscle car world, Jim Wanger's with us. Jim Wanger's, you're on from the Car Guy Show out of Santa Barbara. Talk about the GTO and the GTX.
Well, Steve, that's an interesting question. As a matter of fact, the GTX was a Plymouth, and it was Chrysler's version of a GTO. They did exactly the same thing. They stuffed the big engine into one of their smaller cars.
Of course, that was 1967, right? You're talking just to the audience knows.
That's correct.
Yeah.
And the GTX really never quite made it at the marketing level. It wasn't a significant sales success.
Right.
However, in 1968, when they totally restructured that approach to marketing a kind of a muscle car, brought in the Roadrunner, which had a whole different decorum around it.
The Warner Brothers Roadrunner, beep beep, and all that stuff.
You got it.
Yeah,
magnificent promotion. I wish I'd have thought of that one.
Fantastic. Well, you know what? The only reason they had to be that clever was because you were so clever launching the GTO.
Well, they were.
You can't do all of that,
Jim. No question about that.
Yeah. Well, listen, I was going to ask the audience. Okay, for a trivia question. A trivia question here on the Car Guy Show from Santa Barbara. The trivia question, Jim, I was going to ask is, what year was the Plymouth Roadrunner introduced? Well, you already gave that one away, 1968, right?
That's correct.
And 1960...
It came out in 67 as a 68 model.
68 model. And 1967 model was the Plymouth GTX with a 440, four-barrel. And in 1968, you had a Plymouth 383 or the optional 440?
That's correct.
And then in 1969, you continued with those two models. I'm going to ramp it up to this. So here's the question for the audience. This one I'm asking for by email or in the coming weeks. We'll ask it again. This one would be by email. If you're an email user, you're eligible for today's trivia question. Here it is. What year was the Plymouth Superbird introduced? The Superbird. We had 1967, the Plymouth GTX. 1968, the Plymouth Roadrunner. What year was that gorgeous Plymouth Superbird, which had a sister vehicle? You guys can confirm if I'm correct. I think it was the Dodge Daytona.
That's
absolutely
right, Steve.
Okay, with the big wing on it, of driven over there at NASCAR on the heavy-duty ground pounders. All right, if you've got the trivia answer, we'll come back in a week or two if you come in on email. What year was the Plymouth Superbird introduced? Okay, the clock is running. The clock is running. Now you can go to your computer, and we will move back to the topic. Tell us that juicy background on that test track that Woodward was. I was fortunate to live in Detroit for a couple of years and hang out with you and other people out there and go for a ride in your GTO. But what about the hot rodding that went on between the big three? Help us out on that.
It's an important point to make, Steve, and I'm glad you're bringing it up again, because I don't want to give the impression that this was a factory-authorized kind of a test track.
That's what makes it exciting.
Let's be real honest. You know, there wasn't anything they could learn on Woodward Avenue that they couldn't learn in their own proving ground.
Right.
And they did, and they did a lot of that.
Right.
On the other hand, there was a whole lot of guys that worked for the corporations that had cars of their own, or did on occasion take out a car that was a factory test car, and very unofficially and without any authorization would show up on Woodward in the middle of an evening where there was a whole bunch of off-the-cuff activity.
Sounds like you kind of out there doing some hot rodding.
And you were in the big time in that particular case, and you found out real quick whether you had anything or not.
Absolutely. And you had the new experimental motors and drivetrains and powertrains from the big three under the hoods of those Woodward vehicles.
A lot of those cars showed up, that's correct. But it was a very off the cuff, very much unauthorized. I don't want to give the impression that the factories used Woodward Avenue.
No.
As an official test track.
But a lot of official decisions were made off of what happened on Woodward.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
A lot of guys, got some good experience.
Yeah.
And I was certainly one of them.
Yeah. I wish I could have been there, Jim. Hey.
How did you market that car during a racing ban?
Well, that was a reason for the car. You see, GM enforced their own racing ban in 1962 at the end of the 62 model year. They declared they were going to get out of any active participation in motorsports. Well, we had to pursue that further. And the GTO was in no way ever marketed as a specially prepared car for off-road kind of racing. There were no special parts for it available. The engine, for example, was a hydraulic lifter engine. And the only way you could get it to turn some real serious RPM was to convert that entire valve train, which Pontiac absolutely did not authorize and would not warrant.
Hey, before we lose the show at the end of the day, I want to tell you, we get enough of the straight news. We got to have some fun. Right, Jim?
You bet.
Uncork these
anytime
babies.
Anytime we can talk muscle cars, it's fun.
I'm telling you. Listen, hey, listen, I got to tell you, I was laughing there for a moment because you talk about these cars being built internationally, and I got a bumper sticker that shows, it's a bumper sticker that says, all the parts falling off of this car are of the finest English workmanship, or something like this. You've seen that one. I think it's shown to you. Jim, am I right? It's just the British flag, and it says, all the parts falling off of this automobile are of the finest English workmanship. And you talk about the reputation of these vehicles. I mean, a lot of these British cars, the MGs and other ones, have fabulous driving spirit, but sometimes they have the little characteristics of, leak a little oil, like these British motorcycles, the Triumph and BSAs, you know what I mean?
Well, we all remember the Prince of Darkness, Lucas operation.
Yeah, be home before dark.
Right, that's why the British like warm beer and all that.
All that stuff, Listen, you guys, I want to thank you, Jim Wenger, is the godfather of the GTO, for being a guest here.
It's nice to be here, Steve, as usual.
Always. All right.
That was an earlier taping of auto industry legend Jim Wenger's on his reflections about helping launch the muscle car era with the Pontiac GTO. Now we're going to come right back to the present to reconnect with Mr. Jim Wenger's as he joins us by phone from where he lives today, a long way from Detroit, now south of us in sunny San Diego, California. The marketing man who brought us the Pontiac GTO, now offering a few observations about today's 2013 auto showrooms.
Welcome back to the Car Guy Show. Before I go another second here.
Thank you. It's nice to be here again, Steve.
Thanks, Jim. And I know we mentioned before, I have to reminisce. I know we're talking by phone here, but I have had the pleasure and privilege of having you in studio in the Detroit CBS station that you came and visited when we had the show live out of Detroit. And it was before the Woodward Dream Cruise. And you were reminiscing about, may I say, street racing? You had nothing to do with something like that, did you?
Of course not.
Being the godfather of the GTO, you were more concerned with trunk space.
passenger comfort.
Yeah, right. You just wanted to be sure you had a hood-mounted tack. That's all you needed. So, hey, Jim, we talked in between shows about Cadillac and Lincoln and then BMW, Mercedes-Benz, obviously, and Audi. The manufacturers are all doing such great work. What are the top 3 to 5 vehicles you'd want to say in 2013 if you're going to test drive something in the luxury segment and the performance sedan, you know, family sedan or performance segment? What do you want people to think about driving, testing, driving out there in the marketplace? What's hot to you?
So I think we need to separate the segments.
Okay.
And pick, you know, the vehicles. And I'm starting out with the luxury segment, which we've touched briefly on. There's no question about the fact that the Europeans have taken almost a stranglehold on that luxury segment.
From Lincoln and Cadillac.
Well, I'm not even going to give Lincoln the satisfaction of being compared to Cadillac.
Yeah.
Because the Ford Motor Company has given up on Lincoln, that they literally are if there ever has been a correct use of the term, they're going to have to literally reinvent that car.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't that it wasn't such a strong name and full of so much Americana,
sure,
which happens to be highlighted today by this wonderful film that's out there.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that a change in name wouldn't be appropriate.
That's, you know, Henry Leland must be pretty disappointed if he's watching what's going on. Henry Leland.
You know, he was involved with Cadillac.
Henry Leland.
Days too. Leland.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, he's more than once turned in his grave.
Yeah. Well, Cadillac has. I'll toss it to you again. You mentioned Cadillac. You're watching closely. You've sent out some commentary to me and others in your network of the media about your observations on Cadillac. Let me pull back though even farther. Give us the top 3 to 5 luxury cars in that segment.
Well, there's no question, as I said earlier, that the European, the Mercedes-Benz, the BMW, and the Audi.
So
And Lexus begins to kind of crash that field.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I can't yet give Cadillac that kind of acceptance.
Specific.
There's no question that, you know, image-wise, not necessarily resulting in sales, but Mercedes-Benz still enjoys the strongest image.
Yeah.
And BMW, to their credit, has built a remarkable image, a remarkable kind of a general feeling that their luxury cars are right up alongside of the Mercedes, even though they have been far more successful with some of their smaller cars participating in different segments.
Can you cite any one model of any one brand you just mentioned?
Well, it's not necessarily their biggest seller, but certainly their finest vehicle. In the case of the Mercedes-Benz, you know, it is that. You know, certainly that S-Class Mercedes-Benz and that 7 Series BMW,
yeah,
you know, and that Audi 8, which has every right to be given consideration, although their sales don't necessarily match it. And certainly that Lexus, the Lexus LS model. But I just cannot give any kind of an acceptance to what Cadillac has brought into the marketplace over the last 4 or 5 years. They still haven't got a Cadillac in the Cadillac showroom. The CTS is a wonderful car. There's no question about it. It's without any doubt the fastest production American sedan, maybe in the world, world-class sedan.
Yeah.
But it ain't a Cadillac.
Are you talking about a Sedan DeVille, a Coupe DeVille kind of driving experience?
They got a name.
Yeah.
The name is there. There's no question, DeVille.
Yeah.
DeVille automatically. The only thing that overpowers DeVille is Fleetwood.
Yeah.
And yet they haven't got a product
worthy of
that name. And so when I start thinking about a luxury car without necessarily a dollar limitation, my thoughts immediately go to Mercedes-Benz, BMW, Audi, and Lexus.
Now, why do you put Lexus fourth position in that list?
Well, I guess I shouldn't. I think Lexus probably would deserve to be, in terms of popularity and image success, ahead of the Audi in that segment.
Sure. So Cadillac has a brand name recognition.
And General Motors has had enough time and certainly has had enough money to put a Cadillac, and I'm going to put quotes around that Cadillac, in the Cadillac showroom.
Okay.
And they haven't done it.
So what about the performance segment, since you're a GTO guy? What do you think today is the seat of the pants hot performance vehicle when they're all fast? What do you consider to be the standout home run?
Well, I'm not sure there is such a thing, as a matter of fact. a standout home run performance sedan. Nobody out there is really jumping up and down and actually wanting to claim, you know, the somehow performance sedan are a couple of words that don't work very well together.
Okay, performance coupe.
Yeah, well, the sporty packages, or as we have sort of affectionately in this country learned to call the pony cars, in honor of the tremendous success and longevity of the Mustang. Of those three cars, there's no question today, at least in current segmentation, the Camaro enjoys a little bit of styling leadership, certainly competitive performance, and measurable success. To Ford's credit, you just cannot walk away from the incredible job they have done without a whole lot of really exciting product. They have done a superb job of keeping that Mustang in the mix.
Yeah.
I cannot say the same thing for Chrysler and their efforts with the Challenge. Some styling. They needed to bend the sheet metal a little different. That'll only go so far, and then it gets awfully stale. That's what's happened to that car. What they are passing off as a Hemi today really isn't the Hemi. And it doesn't have the same kind of, if I may use the term, King Kong feeling that they did have in the days of their earlier.
Yeah.
And if you are satisfied with 1970s styling, you know, moderately successful performance, well, the sales on the car are showing. You're not going to fool that segment of the market. Folks know what they want.
Well, those are two segments, luxury and the performance coupe. The world of all vehicles today, even minivans, keep pretty competitively with the vehicles of the 1970s and 1980s. Four-wheel disc brakes and dual overhead cams and four-valve per cylinder engines. It's amazing that in a minivan today could be on Woodward drag racing some of the Mustangs that were off the showroom floor stock back in the 1970s. So it's, people sometimes forget how hot the muscle car era was, but back in that era, you had vehicles that would be turning a 15-second quarter mile that could be being competed with by a family sedan today.
No question.
Isn't that crazy? Does that amaze
you? The level of performance. Well, it isn't so crazy. It's just, you know, you step back and look at the reality of the technology.
Yeah, fuel injection, electronic ignition, dual overhead cams, all that. The godfather of the GTO and an automotive industry analyst and consultant, Jim Wangers, it's always been a pleasure to have you in conversation, and your observations are great. Thanks for being on board again.
Steve, as always, it's a pleasure.
Thank you all for joining us for this segment from the World of Wheels, and this brings us to the close of another visit with all of you here on the Car Guys Show. Join us here again next week for another segment live from the Coastal Riviera right here in Santa Barbara on News Talk 990 KTMS. Keeping you car wise, I'm Steve Ford, the Car Guy.